It's time to awaken to your ultimate potential.
Always something to learn.
The more real and truthful you can get with yourself, the happier you're going to be.
Nothing happens in the comfort zone.
There are no set rules on how to attain success and to feel fulfilled.
Each one of us are born with a purpose.
For me, I knew there was something bigger.
You don't conquer the mountain, you conquer yourself.
I'm Crystal Bauer, wellness expert and entrepreneur. Each week, I'm speaking with incredible individuals, inspiring you to awaken your ultimate potential. Welcome to the Live Greatly podcast.
10 minutes before that big performance or that job interview, do a crossword puzzle. Look at the news. Do something that distracts yourself. Listen to music. Anything that takes your mind off of what you're about to do.
If you're someone who gets nervous when the pressure is on, you're going to gain a ton of value from today's episode. I have Sian Bailuk here with me today, and she is an expert on why people choke under pressure and how to fix it. We're going to be talking about different strategies and things that you can do to prepare for those stressful situations so that you can excel and feel really, really good about your performance. We're also going to be talking about different ways that you can help your children to be able to excel under times of stress when the pressure is on. Sian is a cognitive scientist. She's the president of Barnard College at Columbia University. She has an incredible TED Talk, and she also has a couple really wonderful books. In 2010, she wrote Choke, and in 2015, she wrote How the Body Knows Its Mind. And she's just an incredible woman with a ton of value to offer, and I'm so excited that she's here today. So let's go ahead and welcome Sian Bailuk to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I would love to hear, just in your own words, a little bit about your background and what got you into this area of performance anxiety and how to not choke under pressure.
I'm a cognitive scientist by training, which means that I really study the brain and body factors that influence performance. So I want to know how people perform at their best. And I'm especially interested in why sometimes in those situations where we want to perform at our best, where we feel a lot of pressure to perform at our best, we just can't put our best foot forward. Mm-hmm. And people often ask me how I got into this, and I definitely do a bit of research in addition to research. So I want to know why I haven't always performed at my top in those very situations where I really wanted to show everyone what I knew.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I can relate to that. I think back to when I was a kid and my parents were wonderful and always coming to my games and my sports games, and I would play basketball. And I remember as a kid being like, I don't know if I want you to come to this game, because I would look up and I would see them and it would make me nervous and I would freeze. And it wasn't because I didn't want them to be there supporting me. I just didn't know how to handle that.
Yeah. And sometimes the friendliest faces, the most supportive audience members, can really make you nervous. Either it makes you sort of see yourself through their eyes, maybe as a little girl or not as tough, or, you know, you just want to perform well in front of them, and that puts added pressure on. And so a lot of parents ask me about this, and I talk about really leaving it up to your kids about going to games. But if you are going to go to important matches, you got to let them practice with you there. So show up at practice sometime, so it's not just in the game when all eyes are on them.
Right. That's really great advice. And I would love to know what specific tips you have for people and how to thrive in those situations. And I'd be curious too, if it's different depending on the situation. Like, you have the sporting events, you have the speaking events, you have the test taking, you know, all those big high stress environments.
Yeah. I don't think you choke differently in these different situations, which is actually really interesting, because then you can study how athletes get ready and perform under stress, and you can apply it to the business world or vice versa. And public speaking is something so many people fear, and you can take lessons from all different places to apply to public speaking. And basically, you know, what happens in these situations is that we start worrying about the situation, its consequences, what others will think of us. We really change how we perform. And one thing we do is we often pay too much attention to aspects of what we're doing that should just be left on autopilot. So it's kind of like if you're shuffling down the stairs and I ask you to think about what you're doing with your knee, you'll fall on your face, right? You don't normally think about all that stuff. But when all eyes are on you, all of a sudden, every word coming out of your mouth, every movement you make, you're thinking about what other people are thinking about it. And it actually can disrupt your performance. And I know we've all had this experience in all sorts of situations, whether it's interviews or even introducing to yourself to someone at a party. We often like freeze. We can't get the words out. This is not a high stakes situation, but we're feeling a little bit of pressure.
Yeah. I'm thinking about all these different environments where that happens. And it, for me personally, it's when things take me by surprise, like if I'm not expecting it, because if I can expect an event, I can prepare for it. I used to be really afraid of public speaking and I was like, I'm just going to practice. I'm going to keep doing it. I'm going to teach now the podcast and the speaking and TV stuff. It's like, it gets easier the more you do it. But recently I ran into someone and we were having a casual conversation and then I'm writing a book and they were like, tell me about your book. And I just wasn't ready. And I all of a sudden was like,
So that's a good, yeah. And that's a really good example. But I think what that tells me is that you should be finding people to give that 3-minute elevator pitch to, like your friends and family. You should practice your pitch because then it will be practiced even when it's unexpected. And I think that's one of the most important lessons, that you have to practice under the kinds of conditions you're going to perform under. So if you're giving a speech, it's not practicing just by yourself. It's practicing in front of other people or even videotaping yourself. Anything that gets you used to that feeling of all eyes on you will help you become more accustomed to what's going to happen in the real situation. And you don't need a lot of pressure. You can mimic some of the feelings you'll have just with a little bit of stress. I always say practice in front of the mirror. You can't get anyone to watch you, because we know we become more self-conscious in front of the mirror.
Yeah, that's true. And I actually personally would feel more comfortable probably videoing myself than doing it in front of a mirror, which is interesting.
Because you can actually see yourself. And so that to me suggests that you should practice in front of the mirror.
I should. I'm going to. I like that tip. That's really helpful because I'm doing some TV interviews next week. So I'm like, that'll be perfect to just get more out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
So these are great for like preparation, but what about in those situations where you haven't prepared, when you're in that elevator and you're going to give your pitch and you haven't practiced it, right? What can you do in those situations where that fight or flight kicks in, you are overanalyzing, you are overthinking? And I have an integrative psychiatry background. I have some thoughts about, okay, well, what do you do to calm down that nervous system response? But I would love to hear what your perspective is on and tips that you may have in those environments.
Yeah. Well, my next tip, I bet, is going to be one that you resonate with. And that is that we really do have the power to reinterpret our bodily reactions. So that sweaty palms, a beating heart, if you interpret it as a sign you're about to fall on your face, there's a good chance you will. But we have research, my colleagues have research showing that when we can get people to reinterpret those reactions, right, that beating heart is the same whether you're excited and someone's proposing to you or you're freaking out. And so remembering that that heart is beating, it's a sign you're ready to go. It's shunting blood to your brain so you can think. Reinterpreting that arousal can actually be the difference between succeeding and failing. And so that's a really important one. Remind yourself that your bodily signs are not signs of failure, but they're signs of being ready and up for the challenge.
Mm-hmm. That's really helpful. Now, you did a fantastic TED Talk. And from what I've heard, I've talked with some others who have had TED Talks, and I've heard it's a nerve-wracking experience. Like, there's a lot of pressure there from everyone I've talked to, like tears and intensity. So I would love to hear about your experience with it and what you did to prepare yourself and how you felt with the whole experience.
It's really stressful, and they ask you to memorize your talk. And I never memorize my talks because they want you to get the timing right. And so I was worried that I'd forget part of it. Mm-hmm. And what was even more stressful is, like, your parents, it was in Palm Springs and I live in New York, but my mom's in Northern California, and she flew in to watch. So I had my mother in the audience. Mm-hmm. And what I did was, that morning you could go see a coach and get practice. And I practiced the talk in front of him twice. The first time I totally bombed it, but I practiced with him watching, and I had practiced for the couple weeks before that with other people watching. I was pulling people in from my office just to listen to me. And that was actually really helpful in terms of getting ready to go. And then I always am reminding myself that my body is getting ready so I can think, not so I'll fail. And another tip that I have that we've shown in our research and that I think is really important is being able to think back to those times when you have succeeded in the past. Mm-hmm. For me, I always pull on a time in college, actually, where I had to take a test where I was programming in a specific computer language, and I thought I was going to bomb it. I like panicked. I didn't think I was going to do it, and I pulled it out. And so I always think back, like, I can do this. So setting your mindset in terms of why you should succeed rather than why you should fail. And you can do this in all sorts of ways. I know my talk better than anyone else. Like, you're not going to tell me, no one's going to tell me that they know my material better. So even if I don't get it totally right, no one's going to know. These sorts of things. Actually, we don't have to let our inner monologue control us. Like, we can actually control it.
Right. No, I love that. And you can have it, you know, you don't have to get rid of it, but don't let it dictate your actions, right? It can kind of be more in the background. So it's not controlling what you do and what you don't do.
And also, I mean, I think this is a really overlooked aspect of just human psychology, is that the most important conversations we ever have are with ourselves. And we have them constantly, and we tend to be mean to ourselves. Like, you're harsher on yourself. Like, think back to some of the things you've said to yourself. You would never say that to a friend who you're trying to amp up to get ready to go. And so I think in general, we don't spend enough time talking about self-compassion and the practice of self-compassion. And it's a skill like anything else that you can learn. And I'm a big fan of thinking about self-compassion in this way.
That's really helpful. And also just that compassion for yourself when you're trying something new and you are pushing out of your comfort zone. I think switching that perspective of like, what if I fail, or to, I'm really proud of myself for doing this. You know, this is helping with my growth, and it's okay if my voice is a little shaky. It's okay if I'm having those sensations, because that is part of it. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's giving yourself a break for not being perfect. And also, you're going to notice it way more than anyone else. In psychology, we have a term called the spotlight effect, and it describes the phenomenon where you believe everyone's paying way more attention to you than you actually are. And so things you do that you think everyone has registered and is thinking about all the time, guess what? They're not. They're thinking about themselves.
Yes.
Right. And there's been these great studies where they've had like undergraduates in college go into rooms wearing really embarrassing t-shirts, like in a classroom. And then they ask them to rate how many people will remember that they walked in wearing a t-shirt. And then they actually have the people in the class rate it if they remembered it like 2 weeks later. And it turns out everyone who walked in wearing the embarrassing t-shirt is convinced that everyone else is going to remember they did it. And it turns out that most people don't remember at all because they're paying attention to themselves.
Right. Yeah, that's important to remember. And this fear of judgment and this fear of rejection, I think it's a normal thing, but it shouldn't dictate what you do and what you don't do. It's really being able to overcome that.
Yeah. And actually, as I think oftentimes that it's reminding yourself about the spotlight effect is so important after an event when we start ruminating, right? And just reminding yourself that others don't have the same perspective. They're not judging you as harshly, and they probably don't remember half of what you did. And I think we can all think back to good examples of this. Let's say you're out with your friends and you say something you didn't want to say, and it's a little embarrassing. And then you turn to your best friend later and you said, I can't believe I said that. And like half the time your best friend is like, I don't even remember what you said.
Yeah. Yes. I know I've gotten text messages occasionally like, oh, I'm so sorry about, you know, something that wasn't even on my radar. I'm like, oh, but that goes just to show a lot of us just are overthinking these things.
Yeah.
So that is a nice segue into talking about mindfulness, which I'm curious if you've seen that to be helpful in these situations for people who have spent some time training their minds to be in the present moment. If you have any thoughts about that.
Yeah. Well, I've written two books, Choke, about performance under stress and how the body knows its mind, which focuses all about the environment and mindfulness and how we can use our bodies and our environment to change our mind. And in that second book, I have a whole chapter on meditation and mindfulness. And I think what's so exciting about the research in this area, the neuroscience research, is that you don't have to be a yogi or spend hundreds of hours practicing to really see benefits, right? Even small amounts of mindfulness practice can help you stay in the present, not be drawn off by your thoughts, and actually have a narration for what you're doing that's more positive.
So what would be some accessible tips that someone could start for a mindfulness practice, like for our listener, something that they could do like after listening to the podcast?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of apps that Headspace is one, Calm is another, where you mm-hmm. can just download small meditations. In fact, I did one with my 10-year-old last night while we were getting ready for bed. Just something that sort of calms you down and gives you permission to take 10 minutes to think about your body, to be in the present. The more you practice doing it, the easier it becomes to do it.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed, at least with my kids, like that seems to come more naturally for kids, just being in the present. And I like, there's part of me is like, oh, that's so nice. I miss that. Like it takes more work for me. As a child, it just was like, it was so easy.
Yeah. And I think it comes from even how we think about brain development, right? Mm-hmm. This front part of our brain that controls our ability to focus develops well into our 20s. It often can take over for adults in ways that are maladaptive. Mm. So learning like a kid, being like a kid has some real basis in neuroscience.
Interesting. Okay. That's really, really helpful. So, you know, if you want to learn more about that, definitely check out your books. I will put links in the episode details so everyone can access them. And then also your TED Talk as well. I would love to hear just the little tidbits about your TED Talk and some of the highlights. And then, you know, the listener can go and click out the rest of it after.
Yeah. I mean, I talked about my own experience where in high school, I played soccer at a high level and my own experience with having my worst game in front of the national coach. And it really got me intrigued with this idea that I wanted to know why it happened. Like certainly I didn't want to play badly and certainly I had the skill to play well. So what changed? And it turned out there wasn't a lot of research on why people choked or performed more poorly than expected given their skill level when they wanted to perform at their best. And so that's really what I delved into in my research. And one of the really important things that I found is that perhaps a little counterintuitively in these stressful situations, we start trying to control every aspect of what we're doing. Instead of letting it run on autopilot. And that can be actually really disruptive. So when you're a coach on the sideline or a parent, you tell your kid to concentrate really hard, that could be the worst thing you do in that moment. Instead, 10 minutes before that big performance or that job interview, do a crossword puzzle, look at the news, do something that distracts yourself, listen to music, anything that takes your mind off of what you're about to do.
Mm, interesting. I found, yeah, if I can go for a run or listen to some good music or even laugh before a bigger event, it does take the pressure off. It's like, all right, it's no big deal. Can do this.
Yeah, you can do it. And one thing to walk, instead of cramming in those last minutes, which we know doesn't work, think about the three key points you want to get across. If they take away nothing else, what are the three things? And then if you have a little moment of panic, you can fall back on those three things. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like your security blanket. They're always there. And it turns out that that is probably more than they're going to remember anyway. So three things would be great.
What about your using your body or postures to build confidence in these situations? Is there anything that we can do to make us feel more empowered?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's been a lot of debate about whether sort of holding power poses mm-hmm. is actually effective. And one of the trends that seems to come through is that it can help increase your self-confidence. If I like the fake it till you make it, and our body sends a signal to other people about how they should feel about us. And it also sends a signal about how we should feel about ourselves. So standing tall, walking in, feeling, looking like you know what you're doing and are ready to take over isn't going to hurt you. And I think it's great to be able to embody it in any way you can.
Yeah. What about color choices? I'm curious if you have any thoughts on that. I think personally, it's like if there's a certain color that makes you feel that you like, that makes you feel good, or, you know, same with clothes. Like if you're going to dress in a way that makes you feel confident, I think that can only, you know, promote optimal performance. But I would love to know your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think you don't want your attention to be drawn away to worrying about what you're wearing or whether mm-hmm. it's too short or how it looks. Like you should wear something that you feel good about. Mm-hmm. And so I'm back to my 10-year-old, but her best socks were in the laundry and she had to do something important at school. You know, I said, wear your dirty socks. Can they make you feel good? It's way better. Yeah. And it's things like that. I think we tend to discount how much they matter. And the point is to go in feeling confident and not worried and distracted by these things that actually don't.
So really it's whatever we can do to take the pressure off and make these things not seem as big of a deal. So it's not about obsessing and rethinking and going through your mind a million times before, right before the event and overanalyzing. It's more about just doing something to take your mind off of it is what I'm getting.
Yeah, that's right. There's a time and place to practice, and right before is not that time.
Okay. That is so helpful. And that's my biggest takeaway from our conversation, because I think the common belief out there is that cramming mentality. Like, yeah, got to do it up to that last minute. But that actually, from what I'm understanding, could be detrimental.
That's right. And it's also, there's psychology research showing that stepping back, taking a break is actually a great way to learn and see things from new perspectives. It's kind of like why you have that really great retort to your spouse 10 minutes after the fight. It's when you take a step back. And so there's a real benefit for taking a step back either right before or as you're working on something. Those breaks matter.
I'm all about micro self-care breaks, and that helped me a lot too. And I was practicing and I was seeing a lot of patients. In between, I would just do something. I would do some like Qigong or like move or do something where I felt like just, yeah, refreshing my mind. And I think there's a real value there for people when you're going into a stressful situation, like what you said, to kind of just take that break to do something that makes you feel good.
Take that time. Like, I'm president of Barnard College, which is the premier institution focused on women's leadership, associated with Columbia University. And our students strive, they push really hard. And we talk a lot about just stepping outside, looking at the trees, walking over to the park, which is right across the street. Anything that sort of gets you up from your chair. I think we have this tendency to want to bang our head against the wall to get to the answer. And it turns out there's lots of research suggesting that's not the best way to think at your best.
So if someone is feeling really overwhelmed with a project at work, or you know, you're cramming it out, like I'm working on a book proposal right now, if I'm just like, oh, overwhelmed, the tendency, I think, for a lot of people is to push through it, to finish it. But really taking a moment and doing something different, I think is
more beneficial. So important. And you can actually, you become more creative. You can see connections you didn't. It's kind of like when your computer freezes and you have to do a hard reboot. You get rid of all the connections, the wrong connections, and you're better able to come back refreshed. And you can see this in all sorts of studies, but we talk about it as this incubation effect. It turns out that your mind is working on things even when you're not explicitly focusing on them. It's oftentimes why you have the great idea in the shower or after you've slept. Students in school tend to cram, right? And they pull all-nighters. But that sleep is so important, not only for your physical health, it actually changes how your brain functions and what you know and learn.
This is incredibly valuable. So the biggest takeaways are that I'm getting, take breaks, don't push through it. You will be more productive and have more creativity if you allow your brain to have that time to rest and to go look at outside, go for a walk. And also as far as performance anxiety and pressure and not choking, it's really preparation and perspective.
I think I love both of those, preparation and perspective. Like, you have control of what happens for the most part.
I love that. So I'm going to challenge you as a listener right now to take a look at your day today. And I want you to carve out some time to practice something, whatever it is you're going for. If you have a pitch, if you have an interview, if you have a sporting event, whatever it is, I want you to practice and start working towards building that confidence. And if you can do it in the mirror, from what you're saying, I think that would be the way to do it. And that's what I'm going to be doing later this week too. So this has been incredible. I'm going to do a quick lightning round and then we're going to close. So anything that you would like to add as far as how people can find you, if they want to learn more, again, I'll put links in the episode details, but anything else you would like to share before we jump into the lightning round?
Yeah, you can find more about my research and my books at seonbylock.com. That's my name. I know that's a tongue twister. And I'm on Instagram as presbylock, P-R-E-S-B-E-I-L-O-C-K, and on Twitter as seonbylock.
Fantastic. All right. So let's jump into it. So first question, what new book would you recommend that you personally really enjoy?
Oh, that's a great question. What have I read lately? You know, I just read Quiet. It's Not So New by Susan Cain, that talks about the power of introverts. And I thought it was a great book.
Interesting. And second question, what is a top self-care tip that you personally use that really works well for you?
I would say it's that stepping back. Like I will take 5 minutes to walk through campus or get up and walk around my office. I look out at the trees, anything that sort of gets me up from what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. That's a great one. And then last question, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to yourself from 10 years ago?
Oh, that's such a great question. When you're uncomfortable, like taking challenges or you even fail, it's not always going to feel so bad. You get over it and you look back at some things that you really wanted to get, didn't get, or somewhere where you felt like a fool. And I guarantee it doesn't feel as bad later when you look back as it does in the moment, which I hope gives my younger self sort of confidence and feeling of power to go out there and take those risks.
I love that. I love that. Well, this has been so extremely valuable for me and I'm sure for all of the listeners. So I can't thank you enough for taking some time with me today to share all of your wisdom.
Oh, it was really fun. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
It was wonderful spending time with you today. Just one quick ask. This information is incredibly important to more than just you. So think of just one person today that you can share this episode with, and together we can spread this message that you don't have to sacrifice your well-being to attain success to others who need it. Valuable episodes like this one are published weekly so you and others can have the benefit of reaching your ultimate potential. So click the share button, get this episode into the hands of just one person you know who would gain great value from it. I will see you next week.